Hi, it's Tiana T, and you're listening to Give Me a Beat. When I turned 90, accidentally I started working on TV, and I was given a chance to create music TV shows, which it was an offer that I got, and I took it because I needed a job. I needed to start earning, and this was the first job that came my way, and I was like, yeah, okay, I can do it. Of course, I didn't really have ambitions. But I knew that I could perform this job, and I just took it. And then I became very, very passionate about it. I think I was the most passionate music journalist for a while in Serbia. And I worked on TV for like 10 years, and I think I had 1,000 interviews at least.
Oh my God. Okay, good.
I reported from literally all the musical events, from the smallest experimental, weird Japanese noise artists to the biggest acts at Exit Festival, you know, Johnny Rotten and the Pet Shop Boys and bands like that. So that's what I did for a while. But in Serbia, working on TV or working in media never actually was lucrative in like financial way. I always had to hustle and do a few other side jobs. So I was also promoting parties and doing like press and promotion for certain festivals and party brands. So I also got to meet a lot of DJs and artists through that. And in 2005, I met Abe Duque, the legendary house and techno producer from New York. And he did a live act at one of these parties that I was promoting. And he invited me to sing with him.
Okay.
During his
life. Did
we literally didn't even have a proper conversation before he invited me.
Okay.
he somehow had some sort of like intuitive feeling that I might be able to sing, and he was right, because I was singing in choirs for my whole life, so I have a good voice and I'm like musically talented, and I was entertained by the idea, but I was also really scared. So I was thinking about it the whole day. I didn't want to do a sound check with him because I was scared. But then in the evening when the party was already happening, and before he went on stage, he told me, okay, so I'm going to start my live now. And there's like one mic, which I'm going to use. And there's another spare mic there on stage. So if you feel like singing, improvising, whatever,
just go for it.
Just go for it. Go out. And do it. And somehow I did it. Like 15 minutes before the end of his set, I went out there, I started singing. The crowd went mental, because like half of those people would recognize me from TV and the other half were my friends. So, and no one expected this to happen. So it was really, and it didn't sound bad. I was mumbling something. And then him and his agents at the time, they were all there. They invited me to come to Berlin in a few months and start recording with him. Maybe a year later or some months later, I found out that around that time, he was touring a lot. He was actually like on the peak of his career, because he had a few like really like successful records out. And wherever he would go, he would ask a random person to go out, like to go to join him and sing on stage. And apparently I was the only one who said yes. I was the only one who agreed to it. So that's why I was invited to record and to start working with him on a more regular basis. But so we were talking about 2005. I think maybe only MySpace kind of started.
Yeah, that's actually true.
There is no, like, people are not really in touch every day. We exchanged maybe two emails before I arrived to Berlin. We didn't rehearse anything. I didn't know what to expect. So I arrived to Berlin. And the moment I arrived, they were like, okay, so tomorrow you're going to Offenbach, and you and Abe are going to play live again at Robert Johnson. And it's a Groove magazine birthday party. And the lineup is Ricardo Villalobos, Luciano, Magda.
Oh my God.
Like all the biggest names at that moment in Europe or in the world. And Groove magazine, Groove magazine is still important. It's still relevant and still big. But at that time,
I remember.
It was huge. It was so important to play one of these parties. And we didn't rehearse anything. So we went to Offenbach. We practiced a little bit on the train and we improvised again. And there was this incident, one of the power plugs went on fire. So all of the equipment just stopped. and only my mic was still on because my mixer was connected to another power plug. So we had just my voice, and it was a primetime slot at this super important party. Crazy. And I was like, okay, now I have to sing something a cappella for a few minutes until the guys replace everything and connect it again. And I didn't know any lyrics of, I couldn't like come up with any lyrics of any song. Like I couldn't even, you know, sing Madonna or anything. And the only thing that was in my mind was this baby doll song, Rudy, which was, it was a synth pop hit in Slavia in the 80s. So I was in Germany singing in my own language that no one could understand, a song that nobody knows. So I did it for a few minutes, and then Abe connected all of his equipment all over again. I got a huge applause, and then we continued our live, and we got like raving, like crazy good reviews for this live show, and everyone read it. And then like overnight, everyone started inviting Abe, all the promoters that were booking him, they started inviting him with his new singer.
I love it.
Literally overnight, I was on tour and playing the best clubs and the biggest festivals around Europe. And I still didn't know what I was doing. So, and I still had my job on TV, and I still had my promotion, like my PR job in Serbia. Yes. So I would like spend, let's say, 2 weeks in Serbia, and I would pre-record 10 or 15 shows because I had a show that was aired every day on national TV. And then I would go to Berlin for 2 weeks. And on weekdays, I was learning how to use the electronic equipment, how to use the synthesizers and samplers and rhythm machines and all of that. And then on weekends we would tour, and that was my life for a few years. And it was really exciting because I was actually able to hide that career, the international touring career that I had, from everything that was happening in Serbia. So in Serbia, no one knew. What am I doing? Only people that I knew personally and my friends, they knew.
Yeah, because there were no Facebook, there were no like, there was no way to find out actually when you think about it.
Yeah, actually it was only the people who are really into this kind of music and who were somehow following international press. So, or they were like following the lineups of all these festivals so they could see. But yeah, a lot of people didn't know. So that's how I actually became a performer.
Oh,
Hi, it's Tiana T, and you're listening to Give Me a Beat.
Yes, you are still listening to Give Me a Beat. My name is DJ Baby Monster, and this is my Christmas show with a focus on the Serbian DJ, a phenomenal Serbian DJ, Tiana T. You heard about Tiana's beginnings and how she became a performer. You also heard the first mix that I'm playing tonight. This is her mix from a Belgrade Club Dim from February 2020. I actually really love this part of the mix, and the reason why I played it is because it's showing that a tribalish element of the music that we were talking about. It is also mixing phenomenally very raw folk song from Serbia, and I thought that part is very interesting and also kind of appropriate for the story. The second song that I played is actually a song from an artist called Baby Doll. Her real name is Dragana Todorovic, and she is a Serbian singer-songwriter, one of the most prominent artists of the 80s. This was not Tiana's choice of her five songs. This is actually my choice. Reason being that Tiana actually sang this song or remembered this song in the moment when she was on that gig and when only her mic was working. I found that really funny because it's almost like this was a survival mode, and in that moment when this happened, she remembered this really old song from the 80s. I also played it because I love that song. Baby Doll was really, really a phenomenal artist, and it was really worth playing this. Now going forward, Tiana will tell us a little bit more how she actually became a DJ, how she switched from being a performer to become a DJ. I thought it's a really interesting and very natural, organic way how this happened. So let's hear it.
Parallelly, I also started DJing. I started collecting records because in Serbia, we never had a record shop. And actually, even to this day, it's very hard to get records here because even if you order them online, you have to pay the import tax because Serbia is not in EU. So whatever enters the country, you need to pay import tax, which is like 70%. So let's say a record is 10 euros and if I would buy it online from Serbia, I would have to pay 17 euros. So it's just impossible. So I started collecting records and I started DJing, and DJing was more like a hobby.
So how did that start? Yeah, I see, like, on one side you're a performer, on the other side you're attendee of the parties. Like, that's what you really learned when you were very young age, right? Mm-hmm. Which I totally understand because I know how it is in Serbia. So when did really the switch happen that you said, like, okay, I'm gonna now perform as a DJ. So I'm gonna now be the master of that creative energy and all of that that is happening in clubs.
It wasn't really something that I decided. Actually, that same year when I met Abe and when he invited me to sing, I had my first DJ gig, which was really, it was very clumsy and it was absolutely not pretentious, not ambitious at all. And the idea was not really to DJ, it was more like to make a party. So my best friend at the time, she was also a music journalist and she was mm-hmm. also creating music TV shows, and we were best friends and we were sharing our flat, and she was blonde and I was brunette, and we were like this duo, you know, always together everywhere. And we were interviewing DJs for years and years and years and attending parties. And many times we were like, okay, like we actually have better music at home than the music that these DJs are playing. And just for the fun of it, we asked our friends who had a club at that time to allow us to make a party of our own and to DJ. And yes, we never rehearsed and we didn't know how to use any of the equipment. So we somehow managed to like install Traktor or like one of those softwares. This is how we kind of DJed, but it was really clumsy. And like, we didn't even have the ambition to really properly mix. We just wanted to play our music out. And so it was like radio style. And then we made another of these parties and it was actually successful. And all the DJs, all the Belgrade DJs came to see us because I guess they were also curious to see it, like on one hand, on the other hand, they also wanted to support because we were friends. But I think there was a part of them that they kind of like saw us as a threat, as a competition, because at that time there were no female DJs in Serbia.
Yeah, of course.
Like there was only Slavka and the other one from Novi Sad, Natasha. Yeah. So I think these were the only two female DJs that I ever heard of. So for guys, it was kind of a threat, you know, and they knew how Jelena and me were musically educated and that we know about music, and they knew that we are also workaholics, and they knew that if we actually make an ambition, like DJing our ambition, we might be a serious threat for them.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, of course.
But that wasn't really the case. We just wanted to have fun. So the parties were successful, and then we got our night in one of the clubs in Belgrade. So we got a Monday night, and the club owner, he already had an idea what this Monday night should be. He wanted to have celebrities DJing. So, and at that time, so we're talking about 2005, 2006, this concept did not exist. This concept was new. So because he knew that we are friends with a lot of people who are like minor celebrities or celebrities, and because of our own reputation, all of these people would agree to come and play our party. And these people were not some shallow, you know, stupid celebrities. They were actually people who had their own image, their own reputation, and their own music taste. So the owner was very smart. His business idea was actually smart. He would have the two of us, he would get the two of us as, you know, the faces of the party. We would be like the poster girls for the night. And he would get these celebrities playing and working for free just for fun. And he would actually have credible people. So he wouldn't have, you
super
know,
smart,
like terrible folk singers playing, you know, trying to play techno.
Yeah.
We have a proper music selection. And we agreed to it, but our only term was to, our only condition was that we open and close the night.
Okay.
So then we can also DJ, and then in the, you know, in the prime time of the party, the celebrity guests would DJ as well. So it was a Monday night, you know, people were going out on Mondays, and the party was such a huge success that actually